Welcome to BitCast on Podcast One, the video game podcast with the Axeman.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the BitCast. It's me, your host, the Axeman, also known as Alex. Today I'm joined by a guest.
Hello, my name is Henry, and I have the honor of being on the show for the first time.
Yep, my first guest appearance on the podcast. I was like, hey Henry, you should record with me. And he was like, okay.
That's about how it went, yeah.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about a game that came out back in 2015. It's called Until Dawn. Henry, as the guest, do you want to kind of talk about what Until Dawn is?
Until Dawn is a story-driven interactive survival horror game developed by Supermassive Games. It was actually announced in 2012 and was originally going to be for the PlayStation 3, but was delayed for a couple of years in development hell until it was revitalized, restructured, and released as a PlayStation 4 exclusive.
Right, so it's just for the PlayStation 4. There's no computer version or anything like that, because these days there's usually a PC version of games.
This one's strictly a PS4 exclusive, which is actually very odd in and of itself.
Alright, so we have a little bit of a history with Until Dawn, or, well, I have like a very brief history with it. I believe that last week we were just meeting up for no particular reason, and you were just telling me about Until Dawn. I didn't really have anything to talk about, so you just decided to show me Until Dawn. How did you come across the game?
I actually came across the game from a group of Let's Players I follow online. They go by the Super Gaming Brothers, and they Let's Played the game around the time it was released.
So back in 2015?
Yes.
Okay, and you just happened across their playthrough of the game and decided to share that with me for some reason?
I was actually interested in the game from the get-go, but it wasn't until more recently I decided to pick it up.
Alright, why were you interested in showing me the game? Like, what about that game made you think, hey, I should play this for company?
Mostly because of the story-driven aspect. There aren't a whole lot of games that do story-driven, even nowadays.
So, like, the fact that it's basically a movie, but in the form of a video game.
Right. That's exactly it.
Alright. Well, I think it was a very interesting experience, because we actually watch a lot of movies together, and it felt like that just for a longer period of time than usual.
We went through the entire game in one sitting. A playthrough of it will be about 8 to 9 hours, so you can blitz through it if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, we took one break, but we left the game on pause and we went right back to it afterwards. It kind of reminds me of the genre I'm not too familiar with, but I've been kind of looking into more lately, is like visual novel games, where those games are all about the choices you make. That's the extent of your gameplay, but this game had more than that. There were like aiming sections and stuff, and you were having me make about half the choices for you, so it felt like we were kind of cooperating through this game.
Despite the fact it's a single-player-only experience.
Yeah, well, you know, that's half the fun, is like customizing your own playthrough.
Oh, yes. I would like to point out, he brought up the player choice. This game has something known as the butterfly effect, which actually will change the story of the game depending on the choices you make.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It's usually something karma-related, like, you know, don't be a jerk or else something bad's gonna happen. Or if you go a little out of your way to be nice, usually you'll be rewarded for that.
Right. And the game prides itself on the butterfly effect, because when you first boot up a new story, that's the first screen you see is telling you about it.
Right. It's really a game that I guess they kind of want you to think about your actions and stuff, because the crux of the game's plot is based around doing something nasty and then something nasty happening because of that.
Right.
Well, the plot of the game, let's get into that, is it's pretty much a pastiche of teen slasher fix, or at least it starts off that way. We get a flashback to a year before the proper story, where this group of I think college students or high school late students are trying to pull a mean prank on one of their friends.
That also serves as the tutorial, but that's the gist of it. They're pulling this really mean prank on one of their friends. She goes running off into the woods. Her sister follows her. Not to get into too many details, they end up falling off a cliff and dying.
Okay, so after the opening of the game, we cut to a year later, and the game begins proper. You meet all the characters from the beginning who didn't die. You meet them all in earnest, kind of get glimpses of who they are as people and how obnoxious they all are.
Obnoxious is the right word here, I would have to agree, because you pointed this out to me as we were playing the game. They keep playing pranks on each other.
Yeah, after a prank is what killed two of them a year ago. Never mind the fact that their brother, the brother of the two characters who died, is still around, and you're just playing pranks in front of him like nothing ever happened.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that gets into something that I really like about the game, is that despite that, they have their own personalities, but you can play them kind of however you want, ranging anywhere from complete jerks to flawed but ultimately good characters.
Oh, yeah. They can get character development based on some of the choices you make.
Exactly. And, well, let's just say that can either lead to, well, their demise, or they can survive the entire thing. Because this is one of the few games where the only way to game over is to literally get every character killed off.
Right. Now, there are some, like, strict just action sequences where get the action right or die is the situation. But there are some times where a character will live or die based on the connections they've created with the other characters.
Going into this a little bit, there are points throughout the game where you can find these totems that will give premonitions of the future. However, your actions can change said future. You can use that as a sort of guideline to actually help, okay, do I want to go this way or do I want to go a different direction?
Yeah, it's like one of the few things that the game will throw in your direction to kind of help you along.
You say throw in your direction, but the game is not exactly unforgiving, except for one aspect. This is important. If you fail, like you get a character killed, there is no safe scumming. You have to play the entire game over.
I heard you can actually just, like, turn the game off and then turn it back on from the recent save point, but that kind of defeats the spirit of what you're doing.
You're basically the idea that your the consequences of your actions, you live with them.
Yeah, that's one of the key phrases of the game, is the past is beyond your control or something like that.
It's brought up no less than, I believe, 3 times in the opening alone.
And it's kind of one of the major points of the plot, is that the past is now something that everyone has to live with, because they'll have to live with the fact that they drove two of their friends to death by accident a year ago.
We should point out that the two characters that died at the very beginning, there is no way to change that. That is one of the few scripted events.
Yeah, that's actually a bit of a problem I have. We can get into that a little bit later, though. What would you say makes the game unique, Henry?
Well, it's definitely one of the most story-driven games, and I bring that up a lot, that I've ever played. But the fact that it's actually a little bit more chill than a lot of the other survival horror games I've played, it's not, you know, real heavy into the occult like Silent Hill, nor is it real action-oriented like Resident Evil. It's trying to do its own thing and establish its own identity.
Right, I kind of see what you're going for with that one. It's not, like, over the top beating your head with monsters and symbolism, and it's not like Die Hard or anything, but I don't know if I'd say it has its own identity, because it really is just like a pastiche of teen slasher movies, like I might have already said.
Right, and you're entirely right. It is basically your teen slasher films, mostly of, I would say, the 80s or 90s, but you don't see that a lot in games, even nowadays.
I guess that's true, and they really did try to make it as realistic as possible, modeling the characters after their actors and doing a lot of motion capture.
I believe the voice actors also did mocap for the characters.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't be surprised finding that out. It really did feel like I was watching a live-action movie at a few points because of how realistic they tried to be, and the poor lighting in a lot of the scenes just kind of helped make it more ambiguous.
I like the poor lighting as atmosphere, as the setting is up in the mountains at dark. So, yeah, lighting's not going to be very good up that way.
No, it's not. But I didn't mean that as, like, saying, oh, the game has bad lighting. It's just, it kind of helps disguise the fact that they weren't real people on the screen.
That being said, it can be kind of hard to find things, because another thing you do is you collect clues throughout the game, but sometimes the dark environments really make it hard to find those.
Oh, yeah, so they knew what they were doing with the scenery.
It is new generation. The game is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
You think it'll still look as good when, like, the PlayStation 7 is out?
Oh, I don't know about that. It still looks really good, though I will say some of the facial mocap seems to be a little Uncanny Valley for my taste.
Yeah, I mean, that's the risk you run with a lot of realistic games. That's kind of why some games prefer to go for a more timeless look, and I think that's why people were not really thrilled about Wind Waker getting an HD remake, because the first game still looked fine.
It still looks fine to this day, even.
Yeah. Alright, well, one of the big things about this game is the cast of characters, and normally on the BitCast, I try to avoid heavy spoilers, but I don't really want to stifle the conversation, and the game is a few years old at this point, so I feel like we've done all we can to sell you on the game. If you want to play it, you can go look it up. If you want to just keep hearing us talk, then hey, you're in luck. So, we've got 8 central characters in this story. I believe their names are Sam, Mike, Jessica, Josh, Mike... No, Matt. I kept getting them mixed up even when we were playing the game. So, let me just start over. Sam, Josh, Jessica, Mike, Matt, Emily, Chris, and Ashley. And then the 2 characters in the prologue who died were Hannah and Beth.
That would be entirely right. Josh, Hannah, and Beth are all siblings.
Yeah, that's one of the major things about Josh's character, because he's the only one who survived to the present day.
Well, so, out of the family, the other 7 you play as all obviously survived. They may not survive the night, depending on your choices, though.
Yeah, some of them can die. Well, they don't really die until later on in the game, because the plot still kind of needs them for things. And it's kind of interesting to see, like, what different combinations of characters survive or die based on how good you are at the game and how good you are at managing their relationships with each other.
With that in mind, I would like to, if Alex hasn't already, there will be some spoilers in this, so...
Yeah, I mentioned the spoilers.
Okay. So, yes, characters can die. However, roughly the first half of the game, I'd say, you're really not at a risk of it, because the story still needs them.
Yeah, that's kind of what I just said.
However, there is one exception to this rule. Jessica can actually die before the halfway point.
Oh, yeah, that's... You have to go through a sequence of action events to catch up to her after she gets whisked away by something, and if you're too slow, she dies. And the game kind of expects her to die, because she's usually out of the plot for the rest of the game until then, except for one kind of inconsequential scene.
Two, actually. There's one that's just a scene and another that's a gameplay point near the very end.
Right. I didn't like most of the characters when we started, because all they ever did was act, like, over-the-top sarcastic and jokey with each other, which, I get it, it's true to life, but it felt a little too strong, you know?
I can see that. There are some characters that are genuinely good, even from the get-go. I'd like to make mention of Sam, because her voice actress is Hayden Panettiere. For those who don't know, she's also known for playing Kairi in the Kingdom Hearts series. She also got top billing in this.
I'm not sure what that has to do with her being a good person, though.
I don't either, but we're going to get into that. Sam, when the prank was played, was the only one, other than one other person, that was not in on it. Well, other person other than Josh. She actually didn't want them to do it at all.
Yeah, they tried to kind of sell her as the nicest one of the group, which usually works. Like, she wasn't a saint or anything.
But she was genuinely good at the very end. Actually, throughout the entire game, she's generally the one who's level-headed and cool.
Yeah, I guess so. But just like I said, the characters were all so jokey with each other that it felt like it felt fake after a while. They'd either make jokes at each other, they'd prank each other, or they'd get into arguments with each other. It's just like, oh boy, I can't wait to spend 8 hours with these guys. But the thing was that by the end of the game, as they had to buckle down and deal with the real threats around them, I actually started liking them more because they weren't silly all the time.
I believe you made mention to, you actually kind of felt sorry for Jess by the end of it.
Oh yeah, Jessica was my least favorite character, or among my least favorite characters. That was kind of a title that got passed around between the cast. But yeah, I wasn't too big on Jessica at the start, but I kind of felt bad for her by the end because she didn't deserve
anything that happened to her. No.
No.
Interesting you bring up Jessica was one of your least favorites. My least favorite, and still to this day is my least favorite, is Emily.
Yeah, she's... I did a little bit of research about the game after we were done with it, and Emily is one of the less popular characters.
She's actually one of the least popular ones, along with Ashley. I see a lot of hate for her for some reason.
Oh yeah, that's because of one of the possible deaths for one of the other characters that Ashley kind of...
Oh, yes. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, we avoided that one, though, because I told you to, but I didn't think I really...
Well, I already knew how to avoid it.
Yeah. Like, I didn't think I had to help you that much with that one.
That being said, going into a little bit of how I did, that same character, I avoided that death only to get him killed later anyway by accident?
Yeah. But, Emily, I didn't really have much of a problem with Emily. I get why people don't like her. I thought she was actually kind of funny a little bit.
She's the one that they try to pass off as the smart one, but to me she just comes off as a real big jerk.
Yeah, she is a jerk. They're all kind of jerks, and she probably develops the least out of everyone.
She does. Her and... going back up a little bit here. For some reason, this game has this weird fascination with pairing the different characters. Going into the pairings, Chris and Ashley are kind of meant to be together. Mike and Jess and Matt and Emily. The only ones who don't get real pairings were Sam and Josh.
Yeah, but there's really good reason for that, and I think it's actually time we talk about Josh.
Okay, big spoiler time.
Yeah, so Josh, the brother of Hannah and Beth, he invites everyone to party at the lodge because they do this every year, and even though his sisters died the last time they did it, they're doing it again this year.
Because they couldn't just, you know, memorialize them at a Denny's or something.
Ah, too easy, I guess, but...
Well, we wouldn't have a game if they did that.
No, well, it'd be a very different game. But after a while, Josh and Ashley both get kidnapped, and they're found in a death trap, and Chris has to make a choice which one he has to save, because the other one will get bisected by a buzzsaw.
It's a saw trap.
Yeah,
I don't mean like a literal saw trap, although that's true too. I mean like the Saw movie trap.
Yeah, they try to work that angle into the horror pastiche. And the thing is, no matter what, Josh ends up dying in that trap, no matter what you pick.
Which makes that a foregone conclusion anyway, and then you find out, well, let's back up a little bit. There's a psycho running around that's putting these people in these death traps.
Yeah, and there seems to be everything going wrong with most of the characters except for Sam, Matt, and Emily, because Sam locked herself up in the bathroom to take an hours-long bath.
I think it was like 3 hours?
Yeah, it was like, you're going to be a raisin. Get out of there already.
And Matt and Emily were just out of the plot for most of it.
Yeah, they went to get luggage or something, and they just kind of disappeared.
Fun fact, Alex actually told me about this. I didn't know. When I was playing the game, if you pre-ordered Until Dawn, there was a segment you could play as Matt and Emily going to find the lost luggage.
Yes, the quest for luggage.
Oh, that's throwing gameplay.
Right, but back to what we're trying to say here is that Josh dies no matter what you do, but eventually Chris and Ashley find themselves in another death trap.
Yet another Saw one, but this time it's from the ceiling.
Yeah. And this is actually a turning point in the plot because the trap doesn't actually kill them. The psycho comes out, and it's Josh.
Yes, Josh is the psycho behind the death, huge air quotes, trap. And the way he was bisected earlier was it was a fake body that he's prepped.
Yeah, he had a body double to make it look like he died, probably to freak them out and also probably to not get them to suspect that he was doing anything.
Although, interesting to note, a lot of people guessed it was Josh anyway.
Yeah, that's because Josh, out of the 8 main characters, is the only one that you never really get to spend time controlling.
You don't actually control him until the second half of the game, and even then, it's 2 very short segments.
Yeah, but Josh wanted revenge for what happened a year ago, and...
I would like to point out, by the way, he took revenge on everyone there, and most of them were guilty of playing the prank, except for Sam and Chris.
Yeah, he was really focused on Chris, because Chris was the one who had the most direct antagonization. I don't even know if that's a word at this point. But both of the traps were the only real point where Josh was messing with everyone, and they both centered on Chris, the character who had nothing to do with the prank. He was passed out drunk the whole time with Josh.
Exactly. I would like to point out that Josh did foreshadow it earlier by saying to get Chris and Ashley together because Chris isn't making the move. They may need to be put into a traumatic situation.
Right.
Why he goes after Sam, though, you got me.
I don't know. He's kind of going after all the wrong characters.
Well, to be entirely fair, when you get into a situation like that, it is shown later that Josh has had a history of mental disorders. Yeah. He's been in and out of mental hospitals because of this. Psychos don't tend to think sane.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of controversy online with people thinking, oh, this is a portrayal of mentally insane characters. Well, maybe not mentally insane, I don't know, but it's a portrayal of characters with mental health issues, and he's portrayed as the antagonist.
For the first half of the game.
Yeah, and there's been some controversy over that. I don't think it was like a major breaking news uproar or anything, but people weren't happy with that. And I can kind of see that, but I think the thing is, he had a good motive for it, at the very least. He wanted revenge.
I mean, the motive is solid. It is definitely not original. Revenge is never not original, but it is a good motive. And he didn't actually want to kill them. Just wanted to freak them out.
Yeah. Another thing that you find out by snooping around in the game is that he was misdiagnosed by his psychiatrists, so they gave him the wrong medication. So in that sense, he's kind of a victim too.
And that actually, going into a little personal information, speaking as someone who has been in the mental health system, it's actually very easy to get a misdiagnosis.
Right. But like you said, Josh wasn't the one trying to kill everyone, but at the same time, there's some mysterious stuff going on in the mountains, and Jessica gets kidnapped at one point. Josh has no clue what's going on.
Oh, but by the time he tries to tell them he has no clue what's going on with Jessica, they don't believe him because of everything else he's been doing, which makes sense.
But it's actually the truth. There is another thing out there. Henry, why don't you tell them what the characters are dealing with?
If any of you have played D&D, Pathfinder, or Final Fantasy, you may be familiar with the idea of the Wendigo. Yes, this game, out of all the games I've seen, takes the Wendigo lore and uses that for the second half.
Yeah, you're dealing with Wendigos. I believe those are monsters that were originally human until they turned to cannibalizing dead bodies and they became monsters as a result.
That's exactly right. And that's both true of the game and of the original folklore.
Right. Wendigo lore seems to be fairly consistent whenever it's portrayed, probably because, you know, it's a monster that doesn't get used that much, so they don't really feel the need to reinvent the wheel every time.
It was reinvented a few times in the 20th century with some short stories and the Cthulhu mythos, but otherwise, yeah, it's been pretty consistent.
I believe one of the writers for the game has a history of incorporating Wendigos as the primary monsters, so he seems to have a real thing for them as monsters.
Wendigos aren't seen very often in video games, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't usually do video games, to my knowledge, but they're not seen in a lot of media in general.
Right. The last major thing I can remember a Wendigo in, other than this, was the Cthulhu mythos.
Right. I'm not familiar with that, but I do my research on monsters every so often because I do like monsters, and I actually think it was a good thing that the game tried to focus on one of the more underutilized monsters.
In my personal opinion, I feel the second half of this game is far more interesting than the first half.
It's when the game actually starts trying to kill the characters, because Wendigos are deadly.
Wendigos will not hesitate to kill you if they can get a meal out of it, because at that point, they're just looking for a new snack. Interesting to note, Jessica can be the first one killed, other than Hannah and Beth, of course.
Yeah, because she's the first one to get terrorized by one of the Wendigos, and it's supposed to kind of make Josh look even worse until he realizes that he has no idea where Jessica is.
And he kept telling them, but they didn't believe him until they ran into the Wendigo themselves.
Right. I believe Emily was the first one to come face to face with a Wendigo and make it back to tell everyone.
Yeah, she was bitten by one.
Yeah, which, incidentally, Wendigos do not operate on zombie rules.
Or werewolf rules, for that matter.
Or vampire rules. A lot of monsters with their infectious bites.
Yeah, but Wendigos do not have an infectious bite. This is also true of the original folklore.
Right. So I think that's one thing that just gets kind of passed around that a lot of people like to use for drama.
I will admit that Until Dawn does do a good job with having the teens mistake the Wendigo lore for, like, zombies or vampires, and then assume since Emily was bitten, she was going to turn into one of them.
Yeah, that's kind of a nice touch, is just like the awareness of the genre that they're in. Not quite to the extent that they should be, but, you know, you can tell that they've seen their fair share of zombie movies.
Oh, I mean, this setting is based in the real world, and the actual time frame is 2015, the year the game was released.
Yeah, they're pretty savvy kids.
Even if it's the wrong kind of savvy.
Yeah. So, I think we've talked about what we like about the game. Where do we think the game fell a little bit short?
I personally think the first half of the game was completely superfluous. I get why Josh was doing what he's doing, but it really doesn't add to the story. If they cut that out and focused more on the Wendigo stuff, I think that would have been far more interesting.
Well, I think they did that to kind of make the Wendigos even more suspenseful, because they think, you know, they'll get your guard down. It's like, oh, okay, it was just Josh. And then it's like, wait, there's something else going on? Wait, what did happen to Jessica? Oh, no.
I can see where they went with it. And if you find the clues in the game, the foreshadowing is pretty solid.
Yeah, they foreshadowed the Wendigo's existence pretty well, I think.
They did. Especially if you find all the clues, you can actually view the clues and then find the events of the past that actually detail the creation of the Wendigos, if you will.
My flaws that I found with the game were, well, again, I didn't like the characters for most of it, but they grew on me. I don't like the beginning of the game, and it's not just moral outrage at the cruel-hearted prank, but that's part of it. For one thing, Hannah, the one that they all embarrass, she runs away to cry because they were picking on her, but she ran out into a blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but that just seems like a bad idea no matter how upset you are.
I can understand the emotion going on through her at that moment, but she still should have just run to the basement or something.
Yeah, because running out into a blizzard and having her sister chase her, they get chased by, well, a Wendigo, but they don't know it yet.
At the time, you're not supposed to know it's the Wendigo, except it shows you through essentially predator vision.
Yeah, a Wendigo basically chases them to their deaths and they fall off a cliff and stuff. Another thing is that your choices don't matter at the beginning. No matter what happens, the two of them die. And in a game where choice makes all the difference, some of the first few choices are meaningless. That does a really bad job at kind of getting you into the premise of it.
I'd like to point out the analyst psychology segments don't matter after about the halfway point.
Yeah, they stop throwing those at you. And do you think they even add anything?
Other than changing a few things, not really. I really don't understand why that's in the game at all.
I mean, I guess it's to kind of, after a while, we see that the psychologist is just a hallucination yelling at his client, who turns out to be Josh. So I guess the thing is that it's to show us that Josh isn't really happy with what he's doing as the psycho.
I believe it is supposed to be a portrayal of schizophrenia, which actually, that I believe is pretty accurate. It also feels like he's kind of fighting with himself.
Kind of, yeah.
Like, he doesn't actually want to do this, but at the same time he feels he must.
Mm.
I may be talking out my butt at this point, but that's just what I got from it.
Maybe. But, you know, that said, I don't have too many criticisms with the game, especially since I wasn't the one technically playing it.
Yeah, we did a co-op Let's Play of Until Dawn.
For an audience of zero.
One dog, but...
Oh, yeah, one dog watched. One out of one dogs approves of Until Dawn.
Oh, good.
Did you have any issues with controlling or anything?
The controls... they're tank controls. Actually, back up a bit. The game gives you an option at the very beginning when you boot it up to use traditional controls or motion controls.
Right.
I don't understand the point of the motion controls.
I guess it's to kind of help make the game more realistic.
Well, when it was going to be on the PlayStation 3, it was originally going to use the PlayStation Move, so I guess they just kept it in.
I guess so.
But otherwise, it controls just fine. I mean, it's tank controls, but... this can either be a criticism or praise, depending on how you want to look at it. You have to have the character do everything. Walking, picking up objects, turning objects.
Holding still.
Holding still, that's a gameplay element.
That's actually kind of unique. I feel like more games could kind of use some of that.
I don't know when they would use it, is the thing.
Well, yeah, I guess because it's based on moving the controller or not, but... Yeah, I kind of like the idea behind it. They just have to do it right.
Well, the reason they had Don't Move in here anyways because the Wendigo's vision is based on motion.
Yeah, but I still think as a gameplay idea of forcing you to keep the controller still is kind of a thing that's underutilized. It kind of reminds me of some of the games in WarioWare Smooth Moves where you just, you know, of all comparisons to make... You just leave the Wii remote down, and then you pick it up when you have to.
Yeah, I've seen a Let's Play of that, so I know what you're talking about.
It kind of reminds me of that. It's like that's a time where motion control, I feel, kind of helps, you know, bridge the gap between you and the characters a little bit. Right.
But yeah, otherwise, it's tank controls. If you played the old Resident Evil games or the old Silent Hill games, you know what you're in for with that.
All right. Well... I think that about wraps it up for this episode. Usually I like to talk about my favorite songs from the respective games, but this game, Until Dawn, it kind of went for more of an atmospheric approach. There wasn't a whole lot of music to it. There was a public domain song at the beginning of the game. That was about it.
Not public domain. That was actually original.
Really? I thought it was from a few decades ago.
No, I believe it's original.
Well, we'll have to look that up at another point just to make sure, but... Yeah, not much to say about the game's music.
I will say, though, speaking of music, though, that song we were just talking about, it's called Oh Death. Look it up. It's actually really good.
Yeah, maybe you'll find out whether or not it was original or not. You know, that's something you can take home with you from hearing us chatter about Until Dawn.
Yep.
So, is there anything you'd like to plug, Henry?
Not that I can think of. I suppose Super Gaming Brothers, I have to thank them for introducing me to this game. Mm-hmm. And I will say that their criticisms of the game, I feel, are... I won't say unfounded, but I will respectfully disagree with them.
All right.
Check out their Let's Play sometime, if you want.
I hope they appreciate this free advertising on an unrelated Podcast One podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Other than that, you have anything you want to say?
Well, I mean, you're the guest. I wanted to let you have the first go, but... Hey, thanks for listening. If you... Want to hear more episodes, please consider subscribing so you can hear future BitCast episodes. I've been the Axeman.
And I've been Henry, the guest.
And I'll see you on a future episode.
Listen to BitCast anytime on podcastone.com and on the Podcast One app.